Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
To 2-2, and we've still got more than half an hour to go, and here's Ozil, Lacazette, Ozil!
Go!
Could have had that fight, but I'm in walk on side. Man, I had to drive that mind. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with a good energy. Not gonna work with a bad man vibe. None of these guys could see me like that.
It's Aaron Ramsey. That's foul. Man, that's offside. The response of Arsenal.
Hello, welcome to another Touchy Gooners podcast. I can't lie to you, man. It's your boy Dan Coogs on host duty, but my head's gone. I've lost composure. I forgot how I was going to start this podcast, because Brendan Rodgers is at it again. Yeah, bottle job manager has done it again. How can you go into a match winning in the 95th minute and you end up losing by the 96th? Is this not insanity? What's happening here? But yeah, fuck Brendan Rodgers, fuck Leicester, fuck Spurs and all of that. But yeah, I'm joined by German Dan and Sean. How you guys doing?
We're surviving, man.
I'm good. I had a swim in a while, man. I'm out here looking like, I don't know if you might have watched Orange is the New Black, man. I'm looking like Priest. Like... God, the barber needs me, man.
That's a shout, man. I might go get a trim tomorrow as well.
Brother, why do you think I've got a hat on? My hair right now is an absolute...
Omicron, yes. It's preventing, man, from traveling.
Omicron, everything, bruv. My twist, I haven't done my hair since before I had COVID, bro. So I went to keep...
Damn.
My hair hasn't been done in like 8 weeks, bro. So it looks awful.
Three men rocking Omicron trims, yeah. That's
but it's all right with you, man. When you don't have... When you have twist, yeah, they need to look fresh, bro. When it doesn't look fresh, you look like I look like I'm not even kind of
you really gonna do that?
Listen, I can't show that on the airwaves.
I can't
show that on the airwaves.
No, it's pink.
But yeah, this has been sort of a mad week. You know, it's only Wednesday, but I feel like there's been bare Arsenal news, you know, just bare drama this week already. You know, so we will start with the postponement of the North London Derby, yeah, because I don't think by the time we did our last podcast, this has been discussed on this platform, you know. So everyone and their mum had an opinion about Arsenal postponing that North London Derby. I thought the reaction to it was, you know, over the top, if I do say so myself, like at this stage in the season when... You know, there's been, I think there have been 20 postponements or 19 postponements put in. And Arsenal decided, I think, well within their rights, because, you know, by all accounts, our game on the 28th against Wolves was called off. for similar circumstances. They, I think they only had 2 or 3 COVID cases. I think United earlier in the season only had 3 COVID cases when one of their games was called off. Something like, 3-4 days before their game was even due to be played. So, going by the precedent that had been set, the fact that Xhaka got suspended against Liverpool, the fact that, several players went down with injuries. So Cedric came off with an injury, Saka came off with an injury, Chambers, Tierney also picked up knocks in that match as well. Going by this and the fact that we had so many players away at AFCON, especially in that midfield period, I thought, boom, it makes sense for us to try and get that postponement, especially when you get the likes of Ødegaard, and I think there was another positive case as well to further dwindle our numbers. But it seemed that a lot of pundits, Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, they did their own monologue of the situation. Every single Liverpool Spurs journalist came out decrying Arsenal, saying, this is a disgrace. How can they, do such a thing? They're taking the piss. They're bending the rules, this, that, and the other. And it seemed that we really boiled a lot of piss by sending that request. So, Sean, I'll start with you. It's like, what do you make of all of this rubbish? Because I was still seeing tweets about it today.
It's just mad. Like, it's actually just crazy to me. Like, first things first, the Premier League set a dangerous precedent when, they didn't clarify what the rules were. I mean, there are the rules around the postponement, but when they made it not specifically COVID related, teams are going to try and work loopholes around it. I've seen Burnley have got like 5-6 games in hand. Do you know what I mean? So I don't even know how they're going to manage to fit all of that in. So, what boils my blood is that, like you said, there's been 20 postponements before. So I don't understand why now everyone, has a bee in the bonnet about Arsenal doing it, when at the start of the season, when we were missing guys, we played the games. Do you know what I mean? And then people are like, oh, Arsenal being too naive, blah, 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 playing kids and whatever. So it's like we can't win either way. And I was quite happy, the way Arteta came out today and called out a lot of the hypocrisy. Do you know what I mean? So, and I think that is what it is at the end of the day. Like, Sky, Gary Neville, Jamie had their bits to say. If it wasn't on Sky, I don't think they would have said anything. And I think obviously, the North London Derby, probably one of the biggest Premier League calendar games in the fixtures. Sky know they'll get their engagement. They know they'll get high viewing figures. So obviously, naturally, from their point of view, they want the game to go on. But, if we're basing it on what other teams have done, Leicester were missing games and their players were turning up at the dots and nobody was saying nish. So you get me? They've got to hold that. So yeah, I don't mind, man. I just think it's a lot of rubbish. Do you know what I mean? So Arsenal were well within their rights to exploit the rules based on what other teams have done. It's down to the Premier League to be more stringent in terms of how they how they evaluate it. So there was an article today, they're looking to maybe look into the rules as it is. So it is what it is, but I think it sets a dangerous precedent anyway, because now teams, if they do come and now reverse and change the rules, other teams are gonna look at it later on this season. And yeah, it's a bit of a crap shit show at the moment, but is what it is, man. But I've got no problem with what the club done. I agree 100% with what Arteta done. I agree 100% with what he said in the press conference today. We need consistency and we need fairness. So it is what it is, man.
Yeah, Dan, anything that you want to add to that?
Yeah. Tell the man to hold that. Hold that.
Oh, is that it, yeah?
Because, yeah, I mean, they're telling us we're crying and now they're crying. So hold it in it. Hold it dearly.
Yeah, no, fair enough, man. And I just think, yeah, it's about that consistency. It's about that, just, I guess, that fairness, really. I think the thing that people forget as well is that all 20 Premier League clubs have met, discussed and agreed these rules. So, when you see Spurs writing them statements, putting up public statements, saying, we're very disappointed, we're surprised, we're talking about Europa Conference League and all this stuff. It's just sort of like, well, these are rules that you co-signed. Do you get what I mean? These are rules that you've benefited from earlier in the season when you had 3 weeks off to get your little mini winter pre-season done under Conte. Do you get what I mean? So, I just think it's a bit of a double standard, and You know, I think I saw today that the Premier League, they're meeting to, you know, rediscuss the rules again.
Yeah.
So we'll see what comes out of that. But if, you know, on the flip side of that meeting, that we end up in a situation where they say no more postponements, I'm not going to be too mad at that personally. But I just want it known that, you know, if now another club has an outbreak following that meeting where potentially there are no postponements and they end up losing lots of games like we did, like Leeds did this season as well, and dropping points, I don't want to hear word from anyone, because again, this is what has been agreed. And I think, you know, it should be noted that Arsenal, we tried to get a game postponed earlier in the season. The Premier League made us play, and we lost our first two games whilst the majority of our players, of our main players, were out either injured or with COVID. You know, we played Balogun, we played Martinelli without rest, like I think 2 days after he landed back from the Olympics. And Jamie Carragher and all of these men, they laid into Balogun. They said he doesn't look ready, this, that, and the other. But now they're asking us to play these same under-23s in Premier League matches when we've seen what the coverage is like when we do that. You know what I mean? They don't give us any mercy. They don't give us any credit for doing that. But they'll do it the other way when we don't ask to get games called off. You know, it doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's the game is the game, I guess, right? And we're going to charge it to the game. But essentially, I think this is a Premier League issue. Premier League is the rights holder. The Premier League sets the protocols, and the clubs adhere to them, or they try to, at least. What we've done is perfectly within the rules that the Premier League have set, and which is why it was granted. It's very simple. Not much of a discussion, actually. What I will say, though, is I think, as I said, I think this is a Premier League issue. The Premier League is incredibly passive when it comes to those type of, you know, rule changes, when it comes to setting the protocol. We've seen how it went with the five subs rule. We've seen their late sort of integration of the VAR system. We've seen their late correct implementation of a lot of aspects of the VAR system. If I compare it to leagues across the continent, Serie A, Bundesliga, they were fast when they started doing this, and they implemented it a lot more efficiently, a lot more consistently than the Premier League has. The Premier League is still struggling with some of the rules, 3 years down the line? Like, these other leagues have already been clear with that. So I think generally it's a Premier League issue. They're too passive on some of these initiatives. And even if I compare it to, like, American rights holders, like the NBA, NFL, their protocols are so clear. The Premier League's is not. And I think their protocols are also more sort of, you know, situational. It's depending on COVID, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas Premier League, they're leaving the door open. And it's the same thing or similar thing when they're letting them foreign owners into the league. And the requirements for a foreign owner coming into the league, like, it's way easier than doing in the NFL. It's very difficult as a foreign owner taking over an NFL team, you know. So I just think in general, they are very passive, and those issues and problems will always keep arising because that's just the way that they essentially lead. There's not much more to say on that. I think they will change it. They always seem to carve into external pressure, especially when it's a lot of pressure, which it is right now. So I think they will do some slight adaptation, which I think is fair. I think there should have been from the get-go the way of doing it. But they're going to slightly adapt it, and then people will complain, I think, probably in like 2 months, and say, why did you change it? You have now made it more difficult for other teams when it was easier for other teams in like December. Like, Spurs have really benefited from being able to postpone a lot of their games. They're now getting into a cadence of games where nearly all of their players are fit. They've had work with their new coach. You know, they don't have Europe, so the midweek thing is not really going to affect them too tough. It's perfect for them. But for other teams, they're going to have some injuries, maybe, like, I don't know, the teams that are still in Europe, like the likes of United, maybe the Man Cities, the Liverpools, they might have some injuries, they might have some COVID, they're traveling across Europe. And they will then have some of the games where they end up having to play some of their weaker 11s, I think. I can see it going that way. Chelsea as well. I mean, Chelsea having a bit of an injury crisis anyway, and they've been made to play a lot of the games. I mean, not made to play, but because they have such a big squad, they have the criteria that's been set, they're fulfilling it, and they're playing weakened teams, essentially. I mean, yeah, I don't think it's perfectly fair, but it is what it is. And I guess charge it to the game. Let's see how we get on with it. We don't have Europe. Let's see if we can keep our players fit, players away from COVID. Partey, don't go to whatever motives you're planning on going to.
Cancel no blame bar.
But I cancel that troops. Because if we see you out there,
no luck Sundays.
It's gonna be a problem. It's gonna be a problem.
Yeah, so we have a big week ahead of us. So we obviously tomorrow we've got the Carling Cup semi-final, 0-0 in the first leg. That obviously took into these postponements. And then we have a game against Burnley at home on Sunday. So Thomas Partey, unfortunately for him and his Ghanaian compatriots, you know, they weren't able to make it through to the next round.
They've got to hold that, sorry.
Of the AFCON. You know, meanwhile, you know, my Super Eagles, you know, 3 out of 3, 1 goal conceded, you know, 8 scored, I think, in the group stage. Can't really complain, too tough. You know, it's not easy for everyone, yeah. But fortunately for Arsenal, that means he's probably going to be back for Burnley. I was reading today that he's going to be on a flight that arrives back today. So expecting him to report back to Coney Thursday, Friday.
No. Hold on. I already said, listen, Partey, leave your Dior's in Ghana. I need you to step onto the plane with your Adidas Predators. And when you land in London, just make sure you're ready to play straight away, man. I need this boy straight away.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So I think, I do think personally, tomorrow will be a bit soon for him, especially after playing Tuesday evening. So it looks like he'll be available for the game on Sunday. But into now, this game against Liverpool, because for me, it's a semi-final. We do have a good chance of making that final. And given Chelsea's current form, you know, potentially winning the trophy as well, right? So with this sort of silverware on the line, how do you play this game tomorrow? You know, how do you approach it?
You've got to go all out, man. 100%. I think it would be a massive disservice, especially after all the hard work they did in the first leg as well. Like, they grafted like so hard in the first leg defensively to give themselves a chance. Now you're set up. Now you're at home. Crowd behind you. Atmosphere at the Emirates has been really good this season, so it's a great opportunity to reach a final. And I think Arteta is very much one of those guys who's driven by winning trophies anyway, so he will put out the best team he can visibly put. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, it's going to be interesting to see who plays, considering Lokonga's the only available central midfielder at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see how he approaches it, but I expect him to go full throttle, actually, funnily enough. Like, I think, you know, they're going to try and leave it all out there tomorrow. And they'll probably just try and cobble together the team to see what they can do against Burnley. I think this is going to be like the massive priority for them this week. Obviously, both games should be important, but, you know, it's not every day you can reach a final. So, yeah, 100%. I don't see why we wouldn't put it all in. Obviously, questions will be around the selection, how Arteta chooses to go about it. You know, so yeah, that's probably the main thing, bone of contention for tomorrow. But hopefully, you know, Tomiyasu's back, hopefully ESR's fit, hopefully Odegaard's fit, and yeah, hopefully we can just, you know, give the best account of ourselves. Most important thing is just to try and win tomorrow, so yeah, fingers crossed, man.
You're me, bro.
You're me, Dan.
Yeah, and Dan, what do you think about this game? Because I know previously people were saying, you know, if we don't care about the Carabao, throw the game, this, that, and the other. But I personally think it's a great competition to win, especially with a young squad. You know, like, I think it's the first trophy in England that Jose Mourinho won. I think it's the first trophy in England that Pep Guardiola won. And I think when, you know, Alex Ferguson sort of lost his way, didn't win the league title for three seasons, and then he sort of revamped with that new look squad with, you know, Rooney and that cohort and Carrick and those lot, that's the first trophy that that squad won together as well. And I personally feel that, you know, in certain periods under Wenger, where we had sort of something brewing, something building, 2008, 2011, that losing those cup finals sort of meant that our league season suffered as a result. And I feel like we lost momentum losing to Chelsea, I think, in 2008, and then to Birmingham in 2011. And I think in both those seasons, we were sort of in a title race and we ended up finishing well short in the end. So, you know, I feel that if you get that little boost, knowing that we're not in the FA Cup anymore and we don't have anything else left to really compete in for the rest of the year, that this is something that we should 100% be trying to win and be taken seriously. And that, you know, if you do lift that silverware together, you know, that can give you that added boost in this top four race that we're going for.
Yeah, I think as generally, I don't care too tough about the Carling Cup, but you always have to add context. So at the start of the season, that's the least important competition to me. Now we are in January, we're at the FA Cup, we are not in Europe, we're in the top four race. And I think last week we discussed it, right? And people were like, just throw the game, I don't care. And I usually don't care about the Carling Cup. And if we don't win it, I mean, it's not gonna pay me. I'd love to win it, to be honest, but it's not gonna pay me, like, I don't know, like even an FA Cup a final loss, for example. But ultimately, we're in a position now to win. And I always feel like Arsenal, as a football club, should be taking every competition serious. I know there's football clubs that kind of prioritize one or two competitions. I think Spurs on the Poch have done that when they tried to do just Europe and just the league. And ended up with no silverware for years. Like, he didn't win anything in a spell at the club. And then you see occasions where it worked really well. A club kind of focused on the league and Champions League, and he's won both. But ultimately, I think we have the resources to have a big enough squad. Usually, I mean, this year we're a bit thin, but usually we have enough players to compete on all fronts, and we should do so. I'm happy for him to play the strongest team in that game. They've left themselves. They created a good platform for them to kind of spring into the final now. Away at Anfield, we were down to 10 men for like 70 minutes and we didn't concede a goal. You know, now we are home, as Shion and you said, the atmosphere is good at the Emirates. We are ready to roll, you know, and I think it warrants a very, very good performance from the team. So hopefully they can put it in. We didn't play over the weekend against Spurs. The legs should be fresher. We having a few people coming back. I feel positive about this game. And I'd like us to win it, of course. And I think I echo your thoughts on building something. I think some part of this team have already won a trophy, of course, the FA Cup, the Community Shield or whatever. So that's already sort of a good platform. I think that's what some of those Wenger teams lacked. They didn't win anything together, even, you know, a section of the team. Whereas this team has it, but there's a lot of new players that have come in. Ben White, Tavares, Lokonga, who am I forgetting? Tomiyasu. It'd be good and it'd be very rewarding if those players share now a winning moment with the ones that have already had one, and we can build on that. It's a young team, and it would be great to win something on the way and kind of push on from there. So yeah, I agree with you guys. Let's go try win it, man. You know.
Yeah, so I guess the main question is right now. Fuck off, Tobes. Yeah, we don't want to read your comments. Just focus on the thing that's pissed me off about this is Tobes actually went to that game. So he was in Leicester today. So he's been sending voice notes. He's been running up and down. I know he's getting sloppy and smashed tonight. Yeah, so we're just gonna have to hold that one. I'm afraid, but. But yeah, no, I agree. And I guess the main issue for me in this match is midfield. So we know Granit Xhaka suspended. He's going to be suspended on the weekend as well. We have Lokonga that's fit. We have Maitland-Niles on loan. Elneny's at AFCON. Partey's at AFCON. He's coming back, but we doubt he's going to be back in time to start this match. And then we have Patino, right? So, you know, midfield, I've seen training pictures of Ødegaard today, so I'm assuming he's going to be fit. Not seen anything of ESR. Arteta said he doesn't really want to give anything away. So let's assume Smith-Rowe is fit, because, you know, otherwise I'm really not sure where we go at all, right? So how do we set up this side tomorrow, Sean?
Your guess is as good as mine, bro. I honestly generally don't have a clue. I feel like, you know, he's at times, obviously, we've seen in the last, you know, 6 weeks or so how we've been transitioning to the 4-3-3 with the utilization of Xhaka as a left centre mid, as a type of eight. And obviously, Arteta's tried it a few times with ESR and Odegaard, but it doesn't work as well. I think the reason it works better, obviously, with Xhaka in there, is, you know, he's got greater ball winning qualities than both of those at the moment. So those two need to improve of that. So, you know, it can, in build up, it can be a 4-3-3, but also, you know, in the defensive phase, Xhaka can drop in alongside Partey to make it a double pivot. I don't know if we have that option. Well, we don't have that option. Do you know what I mean? We don't have, you know, the guy who can act as, you can do that dual role, which is obviously why, you know, we're so hot on Bruno G, because, you know, that's someone who can double up as a six and an eight. So that's kind of, you know, the profile we'll be looking for in the transfer market. But as to what he does tomorrow, I don't know. Maybe he goes for more of a stringent double pivot. That's what I would be tempted to do. Obviously, it's not ideal, but I feel like I'd play Chambers there. I know that's not great, you know, because the other option is, do we move White out of defence and put White in midfield? But I'm not particularly keen on that. I don't really like upsetting parts of the team that work well. And, you know, we've got over half a season's evidence that Gabriel and White works well. It works very, very well. So it's not something I'd ideally like to break up. And obviously, I know Chambers is not, he's not anyone's cup of tea, really. But he has experience. He's played in the Prem, played for Fulham. Was he the player of the season in midfield? Now, I can see Dan laughing. Boy, I'm clutching at straws, I know. But, you know, at this stage, beggars must be choosers, because what's the alternative? I don't really want to put Odegaard deeper. We saw Odegaard when he was deeper earlier in the season. I'm not entirely sure that suited him. And against, you know, you're going to come up against, you know what Liverpool are like, they're that midfield three. It's a flat midfield three. They cover the wide spaces. They're workaholics in midfield. They try to cut off the space, cut off passing lane. So it's going to be really tough. So I don't feel like it's a game you want to go in with a lightweight midfield. And, you know, we've already spoken about our concerns about Lokonga. So I don't really want to put, you know, ESR and Ødegaard are not ready to do that sort of, they don't have that sort of ball winning quality to do that level of defensive work. So I don't know, man. Currently, off the top of my head, my shout is Chambers. Not because I'm advocating it, but just because for me, that's the worst of a bad situation. And I'm not entirely sure what else to do elsewhere.
I've got a bit of a wild suggestion, I guess. I think looking at Liverpool, in that game, I felt like they didn't have much of a threat. I mean, I expect Trent Alexander-Arnold to play better, and on Thursday, I expect also Robertson to play better. So I think they will get some productivity from those two. And Firmino can't really play worse than he played in that game. So I'm expecting an uptake from him and Jota. But I don't think they're going to do much out wide. And usually up wide in the higher positions, as in like on the wings, I feel like the wingers, sorry. Like they will do some stuff on the wings, but not the wingers. Seriously, so I feel like, okay, no Mane, no Salah. Do we need Tomiyasu at right back? Can we not put Chambers there? Let him be that right back, defend. I can't lie to you. If I look at the qualities of a player, being able to play off both feet, strong in duels, fast over ground, recovery, all that kind of stuff, I feel like in terms of skill set, I think Tomiyasu is more suited to playing in the midfield than Chambers. So I would try Tomiyasu in midfield. I would not break up White and Ben White and Gabriel. I think they have been a solid partnership, as you said. But I would try Tomiyasu in midfield. I feel like he's just a bit of a better footballer than Chambers. And I think he's got the physical capability in midfield. I think Chambers would be in midfield. He'd play a couple of nice passes, but Liverpool midfield will pam him and he will lose his duels.
He's not got the agility, right?
Yeah, I think I can see Tomiyasu just faring a bit better there. I don't know how well, but I just, when I look at the skill set, I'm thinking It looks better for me.
Because I guess Tomiyasu kind of does it a little bit with that inverted role that he plays, right? When he's in that second line when we're building play, he sits next to Partey. But boy, this is where
Brother, we're scraping the barrel, you know. Boy, we're talking about moving our best right back to centre.
This is looking sticky. This is looking very sticky, bro. Because what do you lot think about playing Dan, because of what you just said about the wingers not really having, because I think, you know, when it's Liverpool's first team, I don't really want us to play three at the back, right? Because I think you just end up with your wide centre backs just being one on one with Salah and Mane, you know, which is really what you don't want to do. Yeah, but when the wide threat is, you know, Minamino and Jota, for instance, I think what we saw in that match at Anfield is that was actually probably a better matchup. You know, Minamino, we know Holden has, you know, very slow feet, but Minamino, he wasn't really able to get much out of him, you know. And so potential for me is playing that same sort of back five formation with Chambers as the wing back, and then you have you know, you could have your Saka and Ødegaard come in to make that midfield three with the lone striker, similar to what Martinelli and Saka were doing.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Martinelli and Saka were doing. So you can maybe sort of play that 3-5-2 and have Martinelli and whoever else you play, either Nketiah or Lacazette, as your two strikers. That's something that I think we might see. It might be useful, you know. And then you have, you know, Gabriel as your left centre back, Tierney left wing back, either Tomiyasu or Chambers on as your right wing back. And even if Tomiyasu's fit, you can maybe play him instead of Holden as the right centre back in that formation as well. And I think that back three would be quite solid. So I think that's a possibility, and maybe you try, you know, suck them in and hit them on the counter, because, you know, as we saw in the last game, there was a lot of space in behind Liverpool, and Martinelli and Saka did get a lot of joy playing on the counter as well. So, you know, that's something, I think that's what I would do. It obviously depends on, you know, who is fit, because it's a strange one. I think playing, I don't really like, you know, sort of splitting up these partnerships, playing players out of position necessarily. And I think we are going to have to do something. We're going to have to do something, you know, out of the box, because we have one available centre midfielder, you know, that is a Charlie Patino. Yeah. And Charlie Patino, he might be a talent. It's like, you know, I'm not trying to bash the boy, but, you know, this is not a match for Patino. It just isn't. You know, so
you know, I don't mind your suggestion. I think this is something that I'd probably consider in the back three, just because, you know, it allows us to have that numerical advantage in a lot of spaces on the pitch, which is why managers play that, right? The only thing is, I think if we play with two up top, I think it will stifle or it will like minimize our counter-attacking threat. I think in terms of spacing, if we play two up top, there will be a bit more centrally. I know you'd like him maybe to go out to the left a little, but there will be a bit more centrally. And Matip and Van Dijk, I think, will be closer to them. So if it's like three up top, then whoever the striker is, like Azet in this case, or Nketiah, he will be able to, maybe he won't be able to pin them or anything, but he will be able to occupy them. Through his run, through bouncing the ball off. And as a centre-back, you hate going out wide. I feel like the spacing is better when we have actual wingers like Martinelli and Saka wide and high. when we hit them on the counter. And I know, we know, Trent is not tracking back. That's not, he's not any of that. So that ball into that channel is cash money. For me, Ramsdale, that ball into that channel is cash money. White was hitting quite a lot of passes into Saka's channel, which was also working because Robertson was pushing up a lot. I feel like the ball in behind the fullbacks is a way to, you know, threatening Liverpool on the break. So I feel like, I don't know, maybe three at the back, but like 3-4-3 rather than 3-5. Just to have better spacing and have a better counter-attacking threat. But I think three at the back is probably something he might do that, you know.
Yeah, it's a techie one. It's definitely a techie one. You know, so what's your guys' predictions for this game? You know, I can't call it personally. What's your predictions?
Boy, you know.
I don't
hey, Arsenal win, man. Fuck it, man.
Obviously, I'm praying like we win, but I don't know, man. I don't even want to share my bad vibes right now, so I'm going to just keep quiet in it. So
I'm saying 2-1 Arsenal, man.
2-1.
We need that, man, but... I feel like it's just like obviously as much as Jack annoys me, but if Jack and Partey were there, I'd feel a lot more confident. Just generally, like it's the midfield which is it's making my skin itch, bro. It's just it's very, very, very techie.
And I've never seen anything like this before, man. Honestly.
And it's just so annoying because within a like if the game had come like 3 days later, Partey would have played. Do you know what I mean? And you could have just made Partey in Lokonga and you just wouldn't have, there wouldn't have been any concern, do you know what I mean? So, yeah, man, it's tight. But hopefully...
We're in the balance, right? If the game is a bit later, Salah and Mane might be back.
It's true. You know? It's very, very true. That's true.
And then the game is completely different.
I guess this is the chance, man. Let's see what we come with.
I'm really annoyed. That because obviously they plan. I mean, I know transfers are not easy, etc., etc. They knew from mid December, or probably even earlier, that we need something in midfield. I mean, they knew from the start of the season, to be honest. Elneny, Partey going, they probably already knew Andy Metcalf is a possibility to leave on loan in Jan. Like, that's just, 3 CMs, injuries for midfield.
The Maitland-Niles one is so poor, man. Just look like looking in hindsight now, like, cool, if he wants to go on loan, that's fine. But you cannot, look, the same way Juve are saying right now, we're not letting Arta go on loan until we have a replacement. That's exactly how we should have been with Ainsley Maitland-Niles. And, you know, I totally even get Ainsley. Arteta said he had a chat with Ainsley and, you know, he said he wanted to be understanding with Ainsley. Cool. I totally even understand that. But you should be like, you know what, Ainsley, right now it's a bit tight. You're going to play a lot of games in this period now because we're down. But I will keep you to the end of Jan. You can go to Roma at the end of January. Do you know what I mean? You can still have your loan. But, yeah, so I just think, man, it's sad, man. I just didn't think that needed to happen when it happened.
And I agree. So, like, separate from sort of the postponement things, I do think the way that we've sort of organised this January window is not sitting well with my spirit, yeah? Let me say that like that, yeah? Because, you know, like, at the start of the season, we said midfield is like, we've got AFCON coming up. Elneny and Partey are going to AFCON. We are going to have Xhaka and Lokonga as our only two fit CMs. Yeah. Then, you know, we saw that Maitland-Niles was going to stay because, you know, everyone thought he was leaving in the summer. You know, then there was a U-turn on letting him go to Everton and whatnot. My man's posting on Instagram, being like, I just want to go where I'm wanted. Yeah. And all of this stuff.
Like a bad B,
you know, after a breakup, yeah. I just want someone who loves me, yeah. All of that stuff, yeah. But so then we see him actually play centre mid, and then we're just okay, we're like, right, fine. So now we've got 3 centre mid options. Okay. So then North London Derby, the first time happens, Xhaka gets this bad knee injury, MCL, whatever it was. He's out for 3 months. Before that, pre-season, Partey gets his ankle rolled by Ruben Loftus-Cheek in a pre-season match. He's out, misses, I think, like, our first 5 games or something like that as well, right? So you've now seen that your two starters coming into January are not going to play every single game, every single week. Yeah. So now when you've made this decision, you've had this conversation with Maitland Niles, you sat down, you spoke to him, you said, look, right, we don't really see you coming up, going to play. We're going to let you leave on loan. Right. That now says to me that, boom, we need to get a midfielder in January 1st. Yeah. Because Partey's going to play his game against Man City. Then he's going to be gone. And then he's going to be gone. Then we have Xhaka Lokonga. And anything, and the thing is, anything can happen. As we saw pre-season and in North London Derby, anything can happen. And one of these men, if not both of these men, could drop. Right? Xhaka's already missed a long spell out because of a bad tackle. Not because of anything that he did. That could happen again. And lo and behold, boom, he gets himself sent off, which actually is very likely when you're thinking about Xhaka. He's suspended for two games in our most important period whilst Partey's out. So I don't understand how you can let a midfielder leave and put yourselves in this position now where we have one centre midfielder. I just can't make heads or tails of it.
Yes, it doesn't make much sense. And I think this kind of gives us maybe a bit of an insight, more of an insight into what Mikel is like, because I feel like I think he probably thought, okay, I made you a promise and okay, you can go. We will play. We will make it work. No, that's not how it works. We need to be adequately prepared, I think. And I do think he likes being adequately prepared, but I think he's the kind of character that thinks, oh yeah, we can still get by. No, I don't think so. In December, was it in December when he started putting pressure on Edu? Edu and his team are on it. They will get something done. Like, he was putting pressure on Edu. If you read between the lines, I think, for me, I don't know what you guys think, and I think we discussed it in the group as well. For me, it's clear. I think Arteta is not Edu's biggest fan. Definitely not. He likes putting pressure on him in the press conferences. Just subtle little digs. And he also puts pressure on the board. I think he kind of demands things from in his press conferences. So he should also get he should also demand that, you know. I mean, I don't know, this comment is from me.
Yeah, Xhaka got himself suspended. Says Boyka by a 22 play RS6. That is fine. Yeah. That is funny, but
I feel. Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I think Leroy made an interesting point. I think, you know, when we're in the group chat, it feels like Arteta's trying to manage upwards in a way, like he's trying to do his thing, but he's definitely saying, like, because for me, I think it was at the start of this month, that press conference he had at the start of this month, he said a lot. He said, we are short, we need to move. That is telling me, Edu, you need to get on your bike and you need to be closing whatever. So if it's Arteta that's been agreed by whatever, the deal needs to... It does feel poor to me. It does feel poor considering they've had all this time. They've known what was going to happen. We're sitting here 19th of January now, 12 days left of the transfer window, and we don't have a central midfielder, because now, after this Burnley game, we don't have a game for 3 weeks. After that 3 weeks, everyone's going to be back. So that need for that centre mid that you needed for this period is almost going to pass. You know what I mean? So it's obviously they don't want to go big on a centre mid now, that they're going to wait till summer. That's fine. So, but if you knew you wanted that loan should have been ready, as Dan said, by Jan the 1st, so that, you know, we were adequately prepared and adequately covered for this period. Because now we're scrambling. We're doing solutions of Tomiyasu or Callum Chambers in midfield against Liverpool.
It's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. So...
I'm tired of Edu, man. I'm tired of Edu.
He's really, really annoying me. Like, I think it was said, the only way you can salvage this window is if he buys Vlahovic. Like, generally, that's the only way you can salvage this window for me. And he's had time.
The recent story has been he's met with Arteta's agent. Like, and I said to you guys before the podcast, this guy is meeting people, eating rep meats.
Why are you meeting
with no time paperwork? No signed paperwork.
Also, why are you meeting him on the 19th of Jan? Why are you meeting him on the 19th of Jan?
Man, this guy is leaving with glizzies instead of paperwork, man. This guy's this is them barbecue bastards.
Oh, God. Yeah. The thing is, as well, I don't really understand what else is there. So, from just based on the reporting, right? So, obviously, we don't know how advanced it is, but I don't understand what else there is to really discuss with the agent, unless you're essentially telling him to go on strike or something. But, you know, I can't imagine how realistic that is to go on loan to Arsenal when there's no sort of, you know, option or obligation involved in that. So, you know, it just seems a bit strange to me. It all seems very strange, because this is a signing that we needed before the semi-final, if anything. As evidenced by the fact that we went out to Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup because we didn't have a midfielder in, you know. So it is very confusing, and I think we should just touch on that striker situation as well, right? Because I think we saw from multiple sources today, multiple of the English journals as well, so we can probably assume that this is legitimate, is that there was a bid to take Aubameyang on loan with option. Or obligation to buy for £8 million or €8 million, sorry. So that seems like, you know, that's manna from heaven almost, right? Given the situation that we're in with this guy, that he's on 375k per year. You know, there's not really anyone in Europe that can afford to take this guy. So someone's just come and said, boom, we're trying to buy a franchise player here and we're trying to blow the bag. So, you know. I was thinking that we're going to have to end up just giving him away for free. So I personally think that if this guy doesn't have a future at Arsenal, it's a no-brainer. You have to accept it, right?
100%. Like you, I'd never thought in a million years we'd get any offer for Abba. I generally thought we'd have to sit out the next 18 months or we'd have to loan him and pay part of his wages. The fact that you have someone willing to loan and do obligation at the same time. And give you $8 million. You better sell that guy tomorrow, bro. You better give that guy away tomorrow. Because I'm showing you now, that bid is not coming in from anybody again, bro. Nobody's coming with that, bro. For a 33-year-old, my friend, accept that.
Yes, and in all honesty as well, right? I know they said Arsenal mulling over it and stuff like that.
There's nothing to think over, boy.
I generally don't think you regret selling many players. Especially ones who are, you know, the only downside I could see is that maybe Lacazette gets injured and then we have to play Nketiah. But for me, we've seen Aubameyang play striker for us this season, and you've seen an upturn in form when he's out of the team. So for me, I don't think even in that situation, you even want Aubameyang coming back in. But that's just me. I just think you have to accept it.
I think the reason they probably haven't accepted it yet is the situation of Aubameyang, and he's got this health situation. So I think, you know, Arsenal love a bit of PR. I think we're the PR club, to be honest. So ain't no way I can see them accepting it unless they feel like they are. It looks good from the outside as well. Like they've had a conversation, Aubameyang is ready to make the move, etc., etc. I don't think they're just gonna. The bid comes in and a dude's like, yo. Accept it in the next 10 minutes. You know how brand approvals work. Like someone say yes, and you're like going to the next guy and telling them, do this. They're just gonna stall on it a little bit to not make it as desperate. I think seem as desperate as well. But generally, I think Aubameyang's future at this club is done. I think, and I also think, obviously, he had the disciplinary stuff. And I generally feel like Arteta wants to push him out. He wants a different centre forward. And I think the fact that Arteta has played Aubameyang on the wing for so many times and during his tenure here shows you that he doesn't really want them as a centre forward. He doesn't. He's used them there because of maybe pressure or Lacazette just ain't been firing or, you know, but he doesn't want them there, really. So this is now his opportunity to get rid of him. I think he will. He's pretty cutthroat, right? So I think he's gonna take that. I think the only way I can see us not doing it is if they feel like, damn, Lacazette is going to go in 6 months, 5 months. We haven't got a striker in yet. And we can't, and Eddie is going to leave in like 5 months probably as well. We can't, you know, rely on those two. And we might have to just hold Aubameyang because the objective is still top four. If Lacazette goes down, well, Eddie's going to start every game. Imagine Lacazette gets an injury that takes him out 3 months. Eddie's going to start every game. It's not possible. Arsenal have to buy a replacement.
Do you know, the more I'm thinking about it, yeah, they need to get Vlahovic done, bro. They just need to, bro. By hook or by crook, they cannot afford to do it, bro. Eddie's already said he ain't signing a new contract, so he needs to go. So, do you know what I mean? Obviously, hold Eddie to the end of the season, whatever. You get the Tribune, your money for him, you know, whatever. But they need to get that striker. For me, there's no reason to say no to the Ober thing. You're never going to get that again. I also feel, and, you know, if I'm to play sort of like devil's advocate and try to be a bit more positive in the sense, you know, Kolasinac, we've just terminated his contract. Obviously, Mari's gone on loan. Ainsley's gone on loan. There's rumours that Elneny's contract might get terminated as well. So they're clearing a hell of a lot of wage space. And especially if Oba goes on top of that, they've created a lot of wage space. So we'll see if something happens. And it needs to, because I think if the window was to shut, you'd be questioning what Eddie was spent the whole of the last month doing. It is really, really, really bad from him. So I just, yeah. And like I said, it is what he's doing is totally at odds with what Arteta says needs to be done. So something needs to give, and something needs to give very, very quickly. We need to be active within the last week of the window. I mean, sorry, ideally this week, but we've got two games.
Sorry, you must have seen the quote that Sal just said in the group.
No, it
wasn't. Yeah. He said, Arteta and incomings, Eddie and the team are working extremely hard to try and get the players that we want. We're on it, but we have no news to give you. So, well, it's not looking good, but he's stuck it all over Eddie again.
you see?
Stuck it all over him, you know, because to me, that says if we don't get the players, boy, that's not on me, that's on you. You get what I'm saying? And I'm not going to lie, I'm with him.
Because I support it wholeheartedly. I really do support it wholeheartedly because Arteta's made it be known. This isn't my issue, boy. I told you, he's like, I told you what I wanted. You need to get to work, bro. You need to do the job.
Drewski meme, hands up, man.
Boy, that sounds like a new problem. You know what I mean? Because
No. But to be fair, I hear it. It is a new problem. Because I'm doing my job, bro. Your job is to, you know, Eddie's probably sat down with Arteta and, you know, they've identified targets, right? And, you know, which ones are attainable, which ones can we try to do in January? So you need to be on it, bro, on it. Like, this is the thing, like, you know, we're talking about the window opens, but we all know conversations happen way before the window opens. Do you know what I mean? So I just...
It's Arteta. What's that Terminator video? Yeah, when he says, "I do my job, you do yours, you do your job." That's what he's on. Yeah, that's what he's on. Because I can't lie to you. Right?
And come summer, they're not around no more.
What? Yeah, they're not around no more. You're not comfortable in your own ends. You know, like all of this. Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. Because at the end of the day, you know, that win for Spurs today is absolutely massive. Yeah, the win for United. Also massive that these men, they're just racking up points. That's two, I think, last minute winners, 95th and 96th minute winners for Spurs in their last two games. Yeah, this is what we're going up against here. And at the moment, this season, I don't think we've picked up any points when we haven't played well. You know, I think Brighton, the draw, and Crystal Palace last minute are probably the only two draws, and they're draws, they're not wins. You know, where we've not played well, at least for spells to pick up points, you know. So we need something extra. We need some X factor. We need something to push us over the line so we can start racking up these points on a continuing, consistent basis. Because right now, I'm not liking how it's looking for us. I'm really not.
Do you know what it feels like as well? Do you guys remember that January transfer window? I think it might have been like 2009. When we signed Darshavin, and that was just, you know, when you said you just need a bit of X factor, you need something to push you, you know. I just feel like, you know, we're in the top four race now. We need something to give us a push because, you know, I think I tweeted before we came on the pod. I said, I feel like when we win, we have to play ultra well to win. Like, do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, teams with top attackers, they can afford to not always play well because their top attackers can have a decisive moment. Unfortunately, obviously, we're hoping Martinelli and Saka, you know, evolve into that. But right now, that's still not enough, you know. United have like 6-7 attackers, do you know what I mean? So United rarely ever play well. But at the end of the day, United can win games on the flip of a switch just because they have the quality. And at the end of the day, quality tells. And, you know, Kane and Son have been stinking for most of the season. The worst thing that could happen for Arsenal now is that Kane and Son flip into form. That would spell a lot of trouble for us. Kane has stunk all season. But the last thing you want is signs of Harry Kane coming into form, because we're in trouble if that happens.
Boy, I'm looking at his last few games. He's not in bad form at all right now, Kane. I think since that Liverpool game, he's been shooting, you know. Let me just get it up now. I think
I don't think he's played that well though, but he played well tonight.
Yeah, I think he's got 4 in his last 5 in the league now. Okay,
you see what I mean?
And 1 assist. So, oh boy.
And unfortunately, Spurs are in the exact same position as us, where now they're now down to a game a week as well. So, you know, the legs are fresh. Kane isn't having to, you know, run like mad every single game. And, you know, Conte, like, we've seen him, he's a one game a week demon. So, yeah, man, we need something. 100%. Where for me, it needs to be, yeah, Vlahovic and Artur on loan. So that's what needs to happen, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think just on this Vlahovic thing, let's touch on this as well, right? Because, you know, we've seen it today. He's been working on this since October, yada, 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 this, that, and the other. Yeah. Like, out of 10, how likely do you not think this transfer is?
It's so annoying because you read conflicting stuff on it all the time. Like, one minute it's like, yeah, the agent's not picking up the phone, but, you know, it keeps saying Arsenal are bidding, or Arsenal are coming in with big bids, you know, so they wouldn't be putting in these big bids if, you know, there wasn't encouragement on the player side. And, you know, I think the latest one from Arsenic yesterday was talking about, you know, bid accepted, but he wants to join Juve, but they're saying Arsenal can pay a lot more money than Juve. You know, it's so muddled, man. It's all so muddled.
We don't have any ITKs anymore. You know, when you used to have an ITK, you're like, we can kind of gauge what the noise is. We don't.
But the thing is, I'm not even sure, guys, like Fabrizio know what happened, because he's regurgitating the same news every day.
Bro, no, this Fabrizio guy, oh my God. Oh my God. When I talk about, you know, when you talk about people doing the same songs all over, like all the time, like remixing them, this is what he's doing. Like, he tweets about Arsenal like 10 times a day, and he says the same shit that he said at the start of the week, at the end of the week. Like, he doesn't have an update. He rephrases it. So, I mean, for me, he's not really someone that really breaks stories anymore. I think he's kind of more of the guy, he's in the known, but he like kind of confirms things more for me. Like, and on Arsenal anyway, I think he's been wrong a couple of times in the last 12 months. So I don't think he has much, you know, insight into what we do. And then we hear, I saw like one funny thing today. Apparently Richard Garlick is like given, I think he's director of operations at Arsenal. He's given like conflicted information. So he's telling Ornstein one thing on Madison, for example, telling Ornstein, yeah, we're not really in for Madison. We're prioritizing Odegaard. And he's telling people like AFC Bell, yeah, we want both. We're trying to do both. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like we don't really have an insight in what they're doing. I think as fans, we need to try to distance ourselves from already reacting to some of the news stories. So something like, oh, his agents want such and such money. Vlahovic wants 300K. Vlahovic doesn't want to come to Arsenal. This is all just paper talk. There has been no official word from his side or his camp to have any of this type of indication. So essentially, you're getting tired of a guy that is just playing football for the club that he's signed for. Like, he's not even doing anything, you know? So, I mean, we need to kind of distance ourselves from that. And I also think that some of the information the way transfers are, and don't get me wrong, Juventus and Bayern Munich do a lot of pre-contracts. Then there can't be written, so they're usually like a verbal thing. But how can there be a penalty clause on the contract that has not been signed?
If it's a verbal agreement.
Like these things, like these stories, you're just reading them thinking, this is not true, man. Come on, man. Like, I know you need to sell papers, man. And you are doing it well because it's circulating, but I don't know how. Like, it's just spreading like wildfire, man.
This saga is a mad thing. Based on Arteta's quotes that we're seeing come out tonight, you know, about, he said Edu's working on it. To me, the way I'm interpreting it is, Edu, you need to get this job done, bro. You need to get this done. Like, he's saying, like, oh, we've got a plan to improve the squad every window. Like, maybe he's trying to be a bit nice and diplomatic, but that's him saying, you know, we sit down all the time to hammer out targets and say, because Arteta doesn't strike me as the sort of person that panic buys anyway. Based on what he did in the summer, I feel like Arteta has very, very, very specific targets that he wants. And if Edu can't carry it out, then Edu needs to go.
And I also think that, I've said this in the group, and I think you two have agreed. But I think from what I can see from the outside looking in, it seems to me that Arteta has definitely lost faith in Edu, and the working relationship has gotten worse. I think initially he sort of, I think the Pablo Mari and Cedric deals for me look like Edu identified deals that Arteta then said, okay, those are not priority positions. I'm gonna let you do your thing. Then these men come in and they're shit. And we're getting rid of, Pablo Mari is on the way out. We're trying to get rid of Cedric. So from now on, I think Arteta's like super, super like, he's on Edu. Like he didn't want to have any of this Emerson Royal talk. He didn't want to have any of this Neto talk. I think he's very, very specific in the players that he wants, and he's not going to let anything just to go. And just Edu identifies them, we're doing it. I don't think he wants to do that anymore. He doesn't trust them like that no more. So, boy, maybe makes it more difficult for Edu because those Cedric and Pablo Mari deals he was able to wrap up, these other deals.
Yeah, I think that Richard Garlick as well. He can't escape from this either. Yeah, because I think they brought him to do contract negotiations, this kind of thing, and be involved on that side as well. So I'm watching these guys closely. Personally, because this is a massive, massive window for us. You know, there's an opportunity here. We've spoken in previous windows about, you know, clearing people off the ways. Well, Ozil's gone, you know, Mustafi's gone, Socrates is gone, all these guys are gone. There's space in the squad, there's space on the wage bill. You've told us about, you know, this new strategy. Even in Arteta's quotes coming out whilst we're recording, you're talking about the plan that you lot have. This is why we're trying to maximize the use of every single transfer window. Yeah. So it's not even a case of, oh, we're going to wait till summer to do this business. He said, we are trying to maximize the use of every window. Right now, it's minimized right now, bro. That this window has not been utilized at all well, as far as I'm concerned. We should not be in this position with our squad, you know, considering how we came into the season and considering where we are currently in the league and in the competitions that we're competing in. Our squad should not be in this position. And frankly, I feel like if you've spent this since October to now and you don't know whether a player wants to come to your club or not, something is going wrong there. You get what I mean? Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, either you're going to pay the money or you're not going to pay the money, right? There's now 12 days left of January, yeah? 11, because it's basically, you know, going to be the 20th soon when this pod comes out, right? There's now 11 days left of January, yeah? You need to close this deal out or you need to get someone else. Because I don't understand how you can be talking about negotiating and something like this for months on end, and 11 days before the window closes, you don't know whether that deal is going to happen. It doesn't make sense to me.
And you know what makes this worse as well? Obviously, I get the fact this is a big deal. We're talking about big sums of money involved in this deal. But we shouldn't also act like Arsenal haven't done deals outside of the transfer window. I remember when we signed Podolski, we announced that deal in like March, before like he joined in the summer. Do you remember when we signed Rizitsky? We signed him before the World Cup happened. Just after the season had finished, before the transfer window opened. So you can miss me with this stuff about, you know, we've got to wait for the window to open. We know that negotiations happen outside of the window all the time. It happens all the time. So, yeah, listen, maybe, like I said, maybe we're being harsh and there's stuff behind the scenes that we're not privy to. Cool. in that case, I can always retract my statement if stuff comes out and, you know, it turns out, you know, it's different. But on the surface, it just looks like we're not being proactive enough. I can't lie to you. That's what it looks like to me. So,
yeah. So, see, I think we'll leave it there. You know, hopefully we can turn around, get a double win on against Liverpool, and then a win against Burnley on the weekend. Fingers crossed, we'll have a final to play in this season, and we'll knock Liverpool out. But Dan, Sean, thanks for joining me.
Peace.
Yeah. Everyone, thanks for tuning in on YouTube, Twitter. Make sure if you're listening on Apple, you drop a 5-star review. Make sure you follow Touchy Gooners on Twitter, Touchline Fracas on Twitter as well, and subscribe to YouTube, leave a like on the video, all of that good stuff. But thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Peace.
Man could have had that fight, but I'm in walk on sight. Man had to grab that mic. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with a good energy. Man gonna work with a bad man vibe. None of these guys can't
see that. It's amazing. It's Aaron Ramsey.
My shine. That's foul. Man,
that's the response of Arsenal.
Man crossed the line. Score for my team any time I play. Where better know when man's
inside.
Man can't say I get
pushed
to the floor, but you can ask Ian.
Lost their focus in the joy of equalising.
But I won't see you right. Man could have had that fight.
Sports Social Podcast Network.